Hello, and welcome to another episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. On this episode, I'm going to be focusing on some what I'm calling comedy classics. Some are currently recognized as such, and some should be, but all are enjoyable for sure. I'm going to start with the big gun here, which is Criterion's release of The Philadelphia Story from 1940.
Hi. I'm Willie Best, and this is Trailers from Hell. Today we're going to look at the MGM hit comedy, The Philadelphia Story, the picture that brought Katharine Hepburn back to stardom. This is a pretty good MGM trailer for their comedy hit, The Philadelphia Story. This was a huge Broadway smash hit. I think it tells you how much a ticket cost. Yes, $4.40 per seat. I think I paid $280 a seat to see Book of Mormon, which is worth it, by the way. Anyway, The Philadelphia Story was a hit play by Philip Barry that starred Katharine Hepburn on Broadway. She had been labeled box office poison, and MGM dropped her contract. She had her friend, Howard Hughes, buy the film rights to the play, and then she sold them to Metro with the caveat that she star. She got her way, and boy, is this a class act. This is directed by George Cukor, produced by Joe Mankiewicz. The screenplay is by Donald Ogden Stewart. The score is by Franz Waxman. This is an MGM... I love this. An MGM prestige production. It's an interesting story about very rich people. The part is clearly designed for Katharine Hepburn as an aristocratic brat, really. Spoiled. It's about Jimmy Stewart's a scandal sheet guy. This is her fiance. It's really a small little story. It's just so beautifully played with Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, Katharine Hepburn. It's just truly delightful and a showcase for Miss Hepburn. Listen.
Someday over the rainbow, way up.
And Jim owned this song, by the way.
What is this, Connor?
Oh, easy, easy, old man. She's not hurt?
No, no.
Not wounded, Saul, but dead.
Seems the minute she hit the water, the wine hit her.
Now, look here, Connor.
A likely story, Connor.
Hello, Dexter. Hello, George. Hello.
This is her father telling her the truth.
You have a good mind, a pretty face, a disciplined body that does what you tell it. You have everything that it takes to make a lovely woman, except the one essential, an understanding heart. And without that, you might just as well be made of...
I love when people wear tuxedos in their country homes. Cary Grant plays one of her lovers. This is just a truly entertaining movie, shot by Joe Ruttenberg, the greatest MGM cameraman. Ruth Hussey. What's that guy's name, Joe, who plays her fiancé? John Howard. It's just filled with terrific performers, all at the peak of their game, saying this terrific dialogue. It's great fun. I can't recommend it enough.
Just reading the back here, it says, with this furiously witty comedy of manners, Katharine Hepburn revitalized her career and cemented her status as the era's most iconic leading lady, thanks in great part to her own shrewd orchestrations. While starring in the Philip Barry stage play, The Philadelphia Story, Hepburn acquired the screen rights, handpicking her friend George Cukor to direct. The intoxicating screenplay by Donald Ogden Stewart pits the formidable Philadelphia socialite Tracy Lord, Hepburn at her most luminous, against various romantic foils, chief among them her charismatic ex-husband, Cary Grant, who disrupts her imminent marriage by paying her family estate a visit.
Hello. Fancy seeing you here.
Orange juice? Certainly.
Don't tell me you've forsaken your beloved whiskey and whiskies.
No. I've just changed their color, that's all. I'm going for the pale pastel shades now. They're more becoming to me.
Accompanied by a tabloid reporter on assignment to cover the wedding of the year, James Stewart, in his only Academy Award-winning performance. A fast-talking screwball comedy as well as a tale of regret and reconciliation, this convergence of golden age talent is one of the greatest American films of all time. No pressure for you to think this movie's amazing. And I do like it. I have a complicated relationship with this movie. I enjoy it. I enjoy Katharine Hepburn in it. but there are a few things about it that still kind of irk me, and every time I watch it, I'm kind of reminded of those things, and it makes me want to watch some other Cary Grant movies for some reason, you know, just to get this one out of my head. Again, not in a terrible way, but there's some references to wife beating.
How about you, Mr. Connor? You drink, don't you? Alcohol, I mean.
Oh, a little.
A little? And you a writer? I thought all writers drank to excess and beat their wives. You know, one time I think I secretly wanted to be a writer.
Dexter, would you mind doing something for me?
Anything, what?
Get the heck out of here.
Oh, my dear Red, I couldn't do that. That wouldn't be fair to you. You need me too much.
Would you mind telling me just what it is you're hanging around for? Oh, no. Please don't go, Mr. Connor.
Oh, no. Please don't go, Mr. Connor. As a writer, this ought to be right up your street.
Don't miss a word.
There's a really physical face throw that Cary Grant does at the beginning of this movie, where he basically grabs Katharine Hepburn by the face and throws her through a doorway. I'm probably being overly sensitive. Maybe it's, you know, just the way this year has been going, but it's always bothered me and it still bothers me. I like Cary Grant as sort of the obnoxious antagonistic foil, if you will, as the back says. But again, there's something about this character in particular. And maybe it's because the movie kind of doesn't play at all for laughs. There is some more dramatic stuff. There's some more dramatic moments. There's some more moments of pause and introspection.
Kittredge is no great tower of strength, you know, Tracy. He's just a tower.
You hardly know him.
Well, I hardly know him as to know him well. And perhaps it offends my vanity to have anyone who was even remotely my wife remarry so obviously beneath her.
But how dare you, any of you in this day and age, you such an idiotic...
I'm talking about the difference in mind and spirit. You could marry Mac, the night watchman. I'd cheer for you. Kittredge is not for you.
You bet he's for me. He's a great man and a good man. Already he's of national importance.
Oh, you sound like Spy Magazine talking. But whatever he is, Toots, you'll have to stick. He'll give you no out as I did.
I won't require one.
That I don't think a movie like His Girl Friday has. The Awful Truth has a little bit more. But yeah, if I'm going to watch a Cary Grant movie, His Girl Friday, The Awful Truth, those are some comedies that I definitely like to come back to again and again. His movie Holiday with Katharine Hepburn, I prefer that to Philadelphia Story personally. I think that's a really sweet movie.
How does your garden grow, Case? Is life wonderful where you are?
Can be.
But it hasn't been?
Well, I don't call what I mean doing living.
And what do you recommend for yourself, Doctor?
A holiday.
For how long?
As long as I need.
You mean just to play?
No. No, I've been working since I was 10. I want to find out why I'm working. The answer can't be just to pay bills or to pile up more money. And even if you do, the government's going to take most of it.
Yes, but what is the answer?
Well, I don't know. That's what I intend to find out. You know, the world's changing out there. There's a lot of new, exciting ideas running around. Some of them might be right and some might be cockeyed, but they're affecting all our lives. I want to know how I stand, where I fit into the picture, what it's all going to mean to me. Well, I can't find that out sitting behind some desk in an office. So as soon as I get enough money together, I'm going to knock off for a while.
Quit?
I want to save part of my life for myself. There's a catch to it, though. It's got to be part of the young part. You know, retire young, work old. Come back and work when I know what I'm working for. Does that make sense to you?
So anyway, Philadelphia Story, an unassailable classic, without any doubt. And to see Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart in the same movie, in the same scenes, very satisfying.
Oh, I wonder if I might borrow a drink.
Certainly. Coles to Newcastle. Yeah. Excuse me.
What's this? What's it, my book?
Yes.
Seek here, Dexter Haven, you have unsuspected depth.
Oh, thanks, old chap.
But have you read it?
Well, I was trying to stop drinking. I read anything.
And did you stop drinking?
Yes. Your book didn't do it, though.
Are you still in love with her? Or perhaps you consider that a very personal question.
Not at all.
Liz thinks you are. But of course women like to romanticize about things.
Yes, they do, don't they?
Yes, they do, don't they? I don't know. I can't understand how you can have been married to her and still know so little about her.
Can't you?
No, I can't you. I have the hiccups. I wonder if I might have another drink.
Certainly.
Thank you. You know, Tracy's no ordinary woman. And you said some things to her this afternoon I resented.
Well, I apologize, Mr. Connor.
That's quite all right. But when a girl is like Tracy, she's one in a million. She's She's sort of like a...
A goddess?
No. You said that word this afternoon. No. No, she's sort of like a queen. A radiant, glorious queen. And you can't treat her like other women.
No, I suppose not.
As is it to see Katharine Hepburn playing with Jimmy Stewart, who she didn't do that much with.
Did you enjoy the party?
Sure. The prettiest sight in this fine, pretty world is the privileged class enjoying its privileges.
You're a snob, Connor.
No doubt. Awash with champagne was Will Q. Tracy's pleasure dome on the nuptial eve of Tracy Samantha... Tracy, you can't marry that guy.
George, I'm going to. Why not?
Well, I don't know. I thought I'd be for it at first, but you just don't seem to match up.
Then the fool's with me.
Well, maybe so, but all the same, now you can't do it.
No?
No.
Come around about noon tomorrow. I mean today. Snob.
What do you mean, snob?
You're the worst kind there is, an intellectual snob. You made up your mind awfully young, it seems to me.
Well, 30's about time to make up your mind. And I'm nothing of the sort, not Mr. Connor.
The time to make up your mind about people is never. Yes, you are. And a complete one.
You're quite a girl, aren't you?
You think?
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Professor. I don't think I'm exceptional.
You are, then.
I know any number like me. You ought to get around more.
Yes. Not in the upper class? No, thank you.
You're just a mass of prejudices, aren't you? You're so much thought and so little feeling, Professor.
Oh, I am I?
Yes, you am, are you? Your intolerance infuriates me. I should think that of all people, a writer would need tolerance. The fact is, you can't be a first-rate writer or a first-rate human being until you've learned to have some small regard for human aren't the geraniums pretty, Professor? Is it not a handsome day that begins, Professor?
All right, lay off that Professor.
Yes. Professor.
Now you've got all the arrogance of your class, all right, haven't you?
Oh, what have classes to do with it? What do they matter except for the people in them? George comes from the so-called lower class, Dexter from the upper. Well? Mac the Night Watchman is a prince among men, Uncle Willie is a pincher. Upper and lower, my eye. I'll take the lower, thanks.
If you can't get a drawing room.
What do you mean by that?
My mistake.
Decidedly, you're insulting.
I'm sorry.
Oh, don't apologize.
Well, who's apologizing?
I never knew such a man.
You wouldn't be likely to, dear, not from where you sit.
Talk about arrogance.
I mean, we've seen her with Cary Grant in Bringing Up Baby. That's another Cary Grant movie I'd rather watch over Philadelphia Story, personally. But anyway, a great release. Good-looking transfer. Special features include new 4K digital restoration with uncompressed monaural soundtrack, audio commentary from 2005 featuring film scholar Janine Basinger. Very good. In Search of Tracy Lord, a new documentary about the origin of the character and her social milieu. A new piece about actor Katharine Hepburn's role in the development of the film. That stuff I do find fascinating, by the way. I think that's a really neat thing that she basically dug herself out of a bad place as far as box office by finding some good material and, you know, getting the rights herself and everything. I think that's really neat. And that's one of the things I most enjoy about this movie is, you know, her in it and, you know, what she did to get it made. There are also two full episodes of The Dick Cavett Show from 1973. featuring rare interviews with Hepburn, plus an excerpt of a 1978 interview from that show with director George Cukor, a Lux Radio Theater adaptation of the film from 1943 featuring an introduction by Cecil B. DeMille, restoration demonstration trailer, plus an essay by critic Farhan Smith Neme, who I know as Self-Styled Siren on Twitter, and I highly recommend a follow if you aren't already doing so. You should be. Great writer. I'm actually going to just read a quick excerpt from her little essay in the booklet, because it's a great essay, not surprisingly. She's a wonderful writer. This is just in the middle of the essay somewhere. Just a few years earlier, Hepburn had been enduring a string of flops at RKO, which culminated in 1938 with Howard Hawks' Bringing Up Baby. Nowadays, Baby is beloved, but at the time, ticket buyers weren't much interested in seeing Hepburn's dizzy heiress drive Cary Grant's professor nuts. Her next movie, Holiday, made on loan out to Columbia Pictures, was a project she'd long wanted. She had understudied the lead role of Linda on Broadway 10 years earlier. Like Philadelphia's story would be, it was an adaptation of a Philip Barry play, co-starring Grant, and it was directed by her best friend in Hollywood, George Cukor. Indeed, it was Cukor who talked Columbia into letting him have Hepburn. The result, Holiday was almost as good as Bringing Up Baby, and its box office receipts were even worse. Shortly before its release, a trade paper ad labeled Hepburn box office poison. The excellent company in that category of stars, which included Greta Garbo, Marlena Dietrich, and Joan Crawford, was no comfort. Neither Hawks nor Cukor blamed Hepburn for the poor Baby and Holiday ticket sales, but the industry most certainly did. Hepburn was already pondering the future. A little more than a week before the ad ran, she had used her own money to buy out her RKO contract. Anyway, that's just part of that essay. But I myself sometimes underrate these wonderful little essays that Criterion commissions for their releases, and I do recommend watching the movie and then reading the essay. I think it's a really neat practice and will kind of help you appreciate each of these movies a little bit more. So anyway, that is The Philadelphia Story, now on Blu-ray from Criterion. Next up, one from the great Billy Wilder called Avanti from 1972.
Permesso. Avanti. Oh, you read the Newsweek article, right?
I've been called plump. I've been called pudgy. I've been called chubby.
You mean her mother and my father?
You bet your sweet batuti.
You mean all the time that we thought he was over here getting cured, he was getting...
Why don't we bury them here?
If I don't get him back to Baltimore in time for that funeral on Tuesday, there's going to be such a scandal.
There's a lovely old cemetery up on the hill. They could be there together.
Miss Piggott, they were not the unknown soldier. They were the unknown lovers.
Signor Cipriani informs me that when he locked up the place, the bodies were gone.
Gone?
Gone where?
Arnoldo Trotta, Alfredo Trotta, Adolfo Trotta, Papa Trotta, and I am Armando Trotta.
That's a lot of trotters.
Let me make one thing perfectly clear.
Miss Piggott and I are playing Frog League.
It's not that I'm women's lib or anything. I don't mind being treated as a sex object.
You mean you and me is with...
Wasn't that the whole idea?
You bet your sweet batuti.
Well, I don't want you to think that I'm stuffy or uptight or anything. I'm considered a pretty groovy cat, you know? Tuned in. Like when I'm on business in Los Angeles, I always have lunch at a topless place. Oh, my God. Miss Piggott!
Permesso. I mean Avanti.
This one is from Kino Lorber Studio Classics, and the back says, in this hilarious romantic comedy from legendary writer-director Billy Wilder and screenwriter I.A.L. Diamond, a wealthy American, Jack Lemmon, discovers true love while in Italy. This honey of a film is as delightful as the Wilder-Diamond-Lemmon classics Some Like It Hot and The Apartment. When Wendell Armbruster Jr., Lemmon, is summoned to Italy after a car accident claims the lives of his father and his father's secret mistress. As the mistress's daughter, Juliette Mills, also arrives in town, the bodies of both of their parents disappear disappear, and the two instant foes are brought together in a baffling mystery, in an affair of the heart. Beautifully shot by Luigi Cuvelier, and featuring wonderful performances by Clive Revel and Edward Andrews. So, this is one that I myself had underrated in Billy Wilder's canon. I would put it up there with Kiss Me Stupid and a few others that I think don't get the full credit that they deserve. I'm not normally a fan... Okay, that's not totally true, but as movies go, those that are adapted from theatrical material, I think it's a real mixed bag as far as the ones that appeal to me. I feel like you can often feel the staginess of that material, and it's written and portrayed in a certain way that, I don't know, it just turns me off for some reason. And you can feel that a little bit here, but Lemon is one of my favorite actors of all time, so it's hard not to be drawn to just about any character that he put some time into, and he clearly really made an effort with this movie. And it's later period Wilder. It's, like I said, from 1972. It's R-rated. That's interesting to me. Billy Wilder didn't do a ton of R-rated movies. And a lot of his later work is also a mixed bag. And I love Wilder. I'll watch any Wilder movie, really. But this one, yeah, I feel like I'd heard that Jonathan Rosenbaum was a big fan. And I'd seen some talk of it online when this Blu-ray came out earlier this year. People were championing it. And I'm glad I gave it another look, because I hadn't seen it since Laserdisc circa 2000. And I think I was watching a lot of Wilder at the time. And it kind of got lost in the mix for me. But anyway, good release. Special features include an interview with star Juliet Mills and an interview with star Clive Revel. So nice disc from Kino Lorber, Studio Classics. Next up, we got one from Twilight Time. This is Woody Allen's Bananas from 1971.
And now Woody Allen with a few words about his new film. What's the title of your movie, Woody?
Bananas?
Yes, Bananas.
The name of the movie is Bananas.
Bananas, Bananas.
What part do you play in the movie?
I play the part of Fielding Mellish, who is a tester of products at a small company in New York.
We can show you how to turn it out. We can show you how you can save money on a cost basis.
And you think we'll sell?
How is it, Mellish? Can you hear the music clearly?
You should be a great seller in California.
And who, through a circuitous turn of events.
So long, suckers!
Finds himself leader of a Latin American country.
A young Mr. Hernandez, the official interpreter.
Welcome to the United States.
Welcome to United States.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're here to see that your safety is insured. We'll act as your shield in the event of trouble. We missed him.
There are a great many things we have to offer your country in return for aid. Few people realize that we lead the world in hernias.
Same person, all right.
This man is attempting the overthrow of the United States government from without and within.
All right. Let's pick him up.
Fielding Mellish goes on trial tomorrow for fraud, conspiracy to overthrow the government, and using the word thighs in mixed company.
Who else is in the film, Bananas?
Carlos Montalban, David Ortiz, and Miguel Suarez. Yeah.
Are there any unknowns?
Louise Lasser.
Hi.
Oh, yes, I've never heard of her.
I love you. I love you.
Oh, say it in French. Oh, please say it in French.
I don't know French.
Oh, please. Please.
What about Hebrew?
Well, Howard Cosell is in the picture, who is,
Who's he?
Howard's one of the great, great dramatic actors who comes from the Elizabethan stage.
And I think I see the door beginning to open. El Presidente may be coming out.
What do you think of Bananas? Is it a good picture? Is it a fair picture? Is it an excellent picture? Where would you rate it? How many stars would you give it, for instance?
Well, there's no question. It's my bid for masterpiece. The picture's an epic. It's monumental proportions. It's moving. It's rich. It's tense. It's taut. Filigreed. Gossamer. It's a cheap little exploitation film, basically.
We're going to show some pornographic movies.
You need an usher?
How do you think it's going to do at the box office?
Well, we have a very interesting plan. We're going to let people in all over the country for nothing and then charge them to get out.
It says writer here with Mickey Rose, director, actor, Woody Allen's Madcap Bananas, is part wild political satire, part screwball romance. Allen stars as the remarkably named Fielding Mellish, which is actually one of my favorite Woody Allen character names. It feels like a Groucho Marx name for sure, you know, like Rufus T. Firefly or something like that. Anyway, a nebbish whose yen for a political activist, Louise Lasser, involves him in a South American country's exploding revolution up to and including his eventual and unwitting appearance as a Castro-like dictator.
When you're directing a film like you've been doing lately, is it bad while you're directing a film to go see other people's movies?
Bad for me. I don't see many movies as a rule because I don't see contemporary comedies as a rule. I see pictures that can't influence me very much. Mm. I avoid all comedies that can influence me. And as a consequence, my pictures are unlike anyone else's pictures. And I don't know if some of it's good and some of it's not so good, because I'm glad they're unusual pictures. I wish I could get my feet more rooted in reality to some degree, because I think I could probably make even better films, even better. I think I could make passable films if I did that.
Don't have to be modest. That is interesting that when you're working on something, you don't... I've heard that said in other media, writers who are writing a novel don't dare read other novels. Songwriters can't listen to other music. And yet there are those who are afraid that they're going to not be hip to something that's going on. And
I think if your work comes from inside your own head a lot, you know what I mean? Like someone, I'm thinking of Fellini, whose images on the screen and whose projects are enormously personal, that you don't have to see anybody else or do anything else. Or, you know, he could just sit in his room and never go out and make those same pictures, because all those bizarre things. And the same thing with me. I could sit in my room and never go out and probably take the money and run or bananas, because they're... You know, there's not that much, they're not, the humor is not rooted in, it's surrealistic.
Mm-hmm. But would you like to make a comedy that was completely non-surrealistic then? Something like where everything in it could actually happen, and like it happened one night, or some of the old classic comic films like that?
I don't know. I might want to do that.
What you meant when you said more based in reality?
Yeah, as it turns out, the projects that I'm working on now, I'm going to appear in the film version of my play, Play It Again, Sam. Paramount's making it into a movie, and I'm not directing it or anything, but I will be appearing in it. It will require about 8 weeks of acting. But that I would not consider my movie. That's just an acting job. But following that, in December, I'm going to go into production with a film that I wrote and will be starring in and directing. Starring him with other people and directing based on Dr. Rubin's book, Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask. And I've written a script that can only be described as Rabelaisian. And
what would be another word for it?
Trashy. And it's an exploration of the ins and outs, every little nook and cranny of our sexual motivations and interests, and graphically illustrated. It would be sexual relations if the Marx Brothers were doing them.
Oh, that should be hilarious.
Yeah, it's very personal.
Do you get a pressure ever to, because you can write, not to waste your time on anything else? I mean, writing is generally taken to be the most serious talent a person can have. And if a person can write, as you can, seriously if you want to, or funny if you want to, do you ever get this pressure? Why do you fool around with movies or music or any of that from other people? Or even from yourself?
You should just write? Well, you do it because you get away from writing. It's real tough to write. Because when I wake up in the morning and I have to write something, I have to lock myself in the room, in my office or my bedroom or wherever it is I like to write. I like to lie in the bed and write. Now you know. And with a pencil. Yeah. And you do it alone, you know what I mean? And the maid will slip a sandwich in at about 12:30 in the afternoon, you know what I mean? And that's the sum total of my social activity when I write. But when I do a movie, I get a chance to, or a play, I get a chance to meet people, and I can cast, and I meet camera people and look through cameras and travel, and, you know, it's real depressing.
They've got a quote from Vincent Canby on the back here, too. An indecently funny movie. Any movie that attempts to mix together love, Cuban Revolution, the CIA, Jewish mothers, J. Edgar Hoover, and a few other odds and ends, including a sequence in which someone orders 1,000 grilled cheese sandwiches, is bound to be a little weird and most welcome. I agree with all that. Yeah, I like the early funny Woody Allen stuff. Yeah, I like his serious stuff. But Bananas is definitely one that I've always found kind of inspired in its lunacy. You know, I mean, it really has some incredibly goofy moments, some that don't play at all, and some that still play really well. But yeah, it's like a mixture of elements like few others I've seen. And though this Blu-ray does not have too much in the way of special features, it's got an isolated music track. I should say, the score by Marvin Hamlisch is actually one of my favorite scores from a Woody Allen movie, and one that I made into a ringtone for a very long time. I just absolutely adore the opening credits music. I'm going to play a little clip of it here.
Quiero la noche, quiero, quiero la noche de amor. Dame tu mundo, dame, dame tu mundo para mí. Quiero una noche, quiero, quiero una noche de pasión. Oh, mi vida consentida, quiero
Marvin Hamlisch is a great composer, obviously most known for The Sting, but a guy who did a lot of other stuff, and his score is like just perfectly wacky enough to really help elevate this movie. Anyway, I think it's one of, I don't know, it might be my favorite early Woody Allen comedy. I'm trying to think if I like Sleeper more. No, I don't know. It's pretty close. It's pretty ridiculous, and it does feel dated in a lot of the political stuff, but I don't know, there's something that still plays about it. I can't explain it. So anyway, I was very excited to get this on Blu-ray, and I like that Twilight Time has really racked up a nice little collection of Woody Allen MGM releases, and I think I have all of them to date, and it's nice to see them sort of stacked together, you know. Anyway, good stuff, definitely worth getting. If you haven't seen Bananas, definitely worth a look. And lastly, I've got another one from Kino Lorber. This is Son of Paleface, starring Bob Hope, from 1952.
Here we are on the Harvard campus, a boy and a girl. I'm the boy.
You know your little Penelope wants to marry you, darling. But first, go out west and collect your inheritance, the vast fortune your father left you.
Very few people recognize me from this angle. Rather classic hit, haven't I? You should see it when they take the cork out. But enough chit-chat. On with the story. This girl is mad about me.
No, don't kiss me.
Imagine any girl saying that to me. Silly child. I like to kiss this girl because she has just the kind of lips I like. One on top and one on the bottom.
Go now, Junior. Get your money. And remember, I love you. Love you. Love you.
I'm about to turn toward you lucky people. Fasten your safety belts. Don't be impatient, and please, no applause. You might miss the plot.
Magna cum laude.
Magna cum laude. That's Latin, meaning if you folks drive home after the show, be sure and use a car. Well, sir, on with the show.
I'll be waiting. And though you face grave danger, be brave. Be fearless. For remember, darling, you are Junior. Son of Paleface.
Now, I'm pulling this one in here to follow Woody Allen because I know for a fact that Woody Allen is a gigantic Bob Hope fan, and I think I've talked about it on the show before that he definitely copped a lot of stuff from Hope's comic persona. And if you watch movies like The Great Lover or Monsieur Beaucaire, I know I've heard Woody mention those two specifically, you can definitely see things that he's stealing. That sort of nebbishy persona that he developed definitely has the self-deprecation and cowardice or comedic cowardice that Bob Hope, you know, was a big part of Bob Hope's thing, if you will. But this is a Western, directed by Frank Tashlin, who is a very cool off-the-wall director that I like very much from this period, who just made almost like live-action cartoons in some ways.
Tashlin moved on from animation in 1946 to become a gag writer for the Marx Brothers, Lucille Ball, and others, and as a screenwriter for stars such as Bob Hope and Red Skelton. His live-action films still echo elements of his animation background. Tashlin peppers them with unlikely sight gags, breakneck pacing, and unexpected plot twists. Tashlin began his career directing feature films when he was asked to finish directing the 1951 film The Lemon Drop Kid starring Bob Hope.
The back says, 4 years after his smash comedy hit The Pale Face, Bob Hope returned to the screen as Junior Potter, son of painless Peter Potter, the hapless hero of the first film. The Harvard-bred Junior heads out west to claim his father's inheritance.
A scratch, look, a scratch on my mudguard. Sheriff, where's the sheriff here?
I'm the sheriff.
Oh, you're the man? Well, sheriff, run down to the corner and get me a crooked lawyer.
How do you like that?
Look at that fellow rolling in the mud. Arrest him for drunk driving. I'm an innocent man, and if you have any justice in you, you'll accept my bribe.
What's the big idea? Look what you did to our wagon and my horse.
Quarantine that beast. He's got chicken pox.
Listen, you.
Please. Lips that touch liquor shall never touch mine.
I never touched a drop in my life.
Yeah, somebody's been putting bourbon in your toothpaste.
Boy, you...
Get your hands off of me. I'm engaged to be married. And you stop puckering up. I wouldn't kiss you either. Now look, Sheriff, I want... Please, no dancing.
Just a minute. Now you'll pay for that wagon, stranger, or you'll go to the hoosegow.
The hoosegow? Oh, the hoosegow. Hold on, you can't put a Harvard man in jail. It's unsanitary.
What are you going to pay for that wagon with?
Preposition at the end of a sentence, and you split your infinitive. Next thing you know, you'll be dangling as participle. Oh, shame on you. The schoolmarm will certainly hear about this, sir. Now, can one of you peasants direct me to the bank? I'm here to claim the inheritance left to me by my daddy, Paleface Potter.
You Paleface's son?
You're staring right at him.
Hey, Liam! Son of Paleface is here! Paleface!
Also returning for the sequel, but in a different role, is the beautiful Jane Russell as a gunfighter named Mike Torch Delroy, who continually has to save our hapless hero with help from the king of singing cowboys, Roy Rogers, and legendary horse Trigger, who team up with the pair to get to the bottom of a gold shipment robbery. Co-written and directed by the great Frank Tashlin, will success spoil Rock Hunter, and featuring a stellar supporting cast, which includes Bill Williams and Douglas Dumbrill, with cameos by Bing Crosby and legendary director Cecil B. DeMille. So there's a couple westerns that Bob Hope made that I really like. Son of Paleface and Alias Jesse James, I think, are both really good and really funny and do a good job of demonstrating his comedic abilities. They're good vehicles for him. And I do like to see him with someone to play off of as a straight man, which is, you know, kind of what Roy Rogers does here. But yeah, there's something about that fish out of water story that Bob Hope can play really, really well. And this is one that I had been waiting for on Blu-ray for a long time, along with the Road films. And Kino has cranked out a bunch of the Road films now, and this one as well. So hats off to them for being a Bob Hope fan like I am. This disc includes an audio commentary by filmmaker Greg Ford, which is very good, and The Lady Said No from 1946, an animated short film by Tashlin. Very good movie. Like I said, goes well with Bananas to kind of see the origins of Woody and, you know, what he created and developed as his persona in films. Good stuff. So that is it for this week's episode. Hopefully you are into classic comedies and one of these sounds appealing. And hopefully you have a wonderful and Blu-ray filled week. I will talk to you very, very soon. Bye-bye. Oh,